Let's go ahead and open our Bibles to where we left off yesterday in Genesis chapter 21, and we're going to start in verse number 6. We've just had the birth of Yitzhak, or Isaac, the son of the promise. And Sarah says this, "God has made laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh over me." And I shared with you again that that's a very ironic naming, because the reason God mandated that the name Yitzhak be given is because both Abraham and Sarah, when they first heard from God that she was going to get pregnant, laughed it out. They just snickered about it under their breath. And God said, okay, you're going to give him the name Laughter whenever he shows up because of that. Well, he shows up. And they're not laughing anymore in that sense of they can't believe it. Now it's a laughter because it's happened and everyone's excited over it. And so a great use of irony in the naming of this son. Verse number 7, she said, "Who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children?" And I, of course, have to say, God did. "Yet I have borne him a son in his old age." And the child grew and then was weaned. And Abraham made a great feast on that day that Yitzhak was weaned. Now, we don't have clear Bible teaching on this, but I think there is a hint over in 1 Samuel chapter 1, verse 24, that the weaning ceremony was typically around the third birthday of the child. What you find there is that when Samuel is being weaned, that mom brings a three-year-old bull as part of the sacrifice. And some of the explanation given for that is perhaps the bull was supposed to represent the child. And so three-year-old for a three-year-old. And so it's very likely then in my mind that we're talking about Yitzhak having arrived now at his third birthday, which means he is totally potty trained, he is walking, he is starting to get rather verbal and wanting to learn everything that he can get his hands on and get into his head. And so this is a great time to have a special ceremony. And so that's what Abraham does. He has this special ceremony, and then something happened at the party, evidently, that triggered Sarah. Verse number 9, Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, laughing. Now, the situation was this, that Ishmael was the original son of the family. Sarah was the one that prompted the surrogacy law that brought Ishmael into existence. The goal was for this boy, Ishmael, to be Sarah's adopted son, with Abraham being the actual father of this son. And probably for the last few years, that is how things have gone in the family. But that all changed once she became pregnant with a child of her own, because now she gets very focused on the child of the promise. And when the child is born, I think it is understood between her and Abraham that Isaac is supposed to be the heir, because he is both his son and her son together. And that was what they believed they'd been told by God now was to be the case. So here at this special ceremony, she sees the teenager, Ishmael, laughing, possibly making fun of the half-brother of his that has come on the scene. And Sarah gets it into her head, I can't take the chance of having that boy still around. He needs to be out of here. And so, this is what she says, verse 10. So she said to Abraham, cast out this slave woman with her son, for the son of this slave woman shall not be heir with my son Yitzhak. Now the thing was very displeasing to Abraham on account of his son. So he's upset because Sarah's upset. And come on, we all know what it's like between husbands and wives, even those that love each other. Sometimes they can have some rip-roaring disagreements and fights. And I would love to know what sort of words were spoken. Because Abraham could have come back and said, you're the one that wanted him. And back and forth it would have gone. And he is now upset because she wants him out of the house. Tent, out of the encampment, out of the tent city that makes up their whole large family concern. He doesn't want to lose his son like that. And so he ends up apparently seeking out God. And God gives him a response. Verse 12, God said to Abraham, be not displeased because of the boy and because of your slave woman. Whatever Sarah says to you, do as she tells you, for through Yitzhak shall your offspring be named. The offspring in mind here ultimately is Yehoshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Messiah. Galatians chapter number 3, Paul makes that very, very plain. But God tells Abraham, go ahead and send your teenage son and his mom off on their own. Let them go have their own life elsewhere. Which is going to feel strange because this is his boy. And even Hagar is part of the family long term by now. There was some rocky start at the beginning when she was first pregnant. Remember, she kind of copped an attitude, but God intervened and helped with that. And things seemed to be calmed down until this moment in time when Ishmael apparently laughed in a way that got Sarah very bent out of shape. Now, why is all this important? Why am I stressing so much of this? Because Paul goes back to this story in the next chapter of his book of Galatians, trying to explain how we as believers are not under the law of Moses. We are not to be living our lives at its directive and enslavement, because we're under Christ instead. And so he uses the story of these two young men at this particular juncture in Genesis to illustrate his point. And this is what he does. Galatians chapter 4, verse 21. We're going to have a little mini New Testament lesson. Tell me, you who desire to be under the law, don't you listen to the law? So he's kind of ticked off, by the way, when he's writing the book of Galatians. If you haven't read it recently, you need to go back and realize that. He is upset about the Judaizers. Who are the Judaizers? They were Jewish people who believed in Jesus as their Messiah, but they are absolutely insistent that Gentiles couldn't have Jesus as their Savior unless they converted to Judaism first. They had to be kosher. They had to be circumcised. They had to keep the law. And Paul was quite adamant, that is not what God told me as the apostle of the Gentiles. So he says, okay, you guys that want to be under the law, how come you don't bother to listen to the law? And this time he's not talking about the law as in the commandments, but rather the book of the law, which includes the book of Genesis. Verse 22, for it is written that Abraham had two sons, one by a slave woman, one by a free woman. The son of the slave was born according to the flesh. See, it was the choice of Sarah and Abraham and Hagar being brought in as a surrogate to bring Ishmael into the world. And he came by completely normal sexual function. While the son of the free woman was born through promise, where God said, a child of your own body, Abraham, and yes, a child of your own body, Sarah, will be born. Sarah was already postmenopausal by quite a few years by the time she became pregnant with Yitzhak. So he comes through a promise, not through the flesh simply. Verse 24, now this may be interpreted allegorically. These women are two covenants. One is from Mount Sinai, bearing children for slavery. She's Hagar. And now Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia. She corresponds to the present Jerusalem, for she is in slavery with her children. So Paul was basically saying, guess what? The Jewish legal system, the law of Moses, is compared to Mount Sinai, physical Mount Sinai in Arabia, to physical Jerusalem, where the Sanhedrin was located in the temple of his day, and Hagar, the slave woman, the woman that brought flesh into existence, that is, a fleshly son. And so you don't want to be all tied up with the flesh, is what Paul argues. Verse 26, but the Jerusalem above is free, and she is our mother. And so he compares the new covenant with Sarah and freedom and Yitzhak, the child of the promise. Verse 29 is where I wanted to get to finally. But just as it was at that time, he who was born according to the flesh, that would be Ishmael, persecuted him who was born according to the spirit, that would be Yitzhak, and so it is also to this day. And what does the scripture say? Cast out the slave woman and her son, for the son of the slave woman shall not inherit with the son of the free woman. And you recognize those are the words of Sarah to Abraham here in the book of Genesis that we've been studying. So, brothers, we are not children of the slave, but of the free woman. So according to Paul in verse 29 there, whatever it was that Ishmael did, seems to have been a bit of a slam against Yitzhak. It was a persecution thing. So maybe he was mocking him or making fun of him in some fashion at this special ceremony. And that's what got Sarah all upset and wanted them gone. But Paul says, hey, we can all learn a lesson from that, because the only thing that counts is being a child of the promise, not a child of the flesh. Being a child of the promise that came through Jesus Christ. All right, thus ends the little New Testament mini lesson. Let's get back to Genesis 21. Read in verse 13, says, I will make a nation of the son of the slave woman also, because he is your offspring. So he reminds him of something that had already been said earlier, and that is, Ishmael is going to have a whole bunch of offspring. He's going to be very well blessed, going to be a special group that comes out of that. And so Abraham should take comfort in that. And just because they're going to go live elsewhere does not mean that Abraham will lose complete contact with Ishmael. We know that Ishmael comes and helps Yitzhak bury Abraham later. And so there is still family contact, even though there's going to be some distance between the two communities. In some respects, you should probably think of this as being similar to the dividing up of the encampment of Lot from Abraham. Lot was much older than Ishmael is, but there is going to be a division between their households. Verse 14. So Abraham rose early in the morning. He took bread and a skin of water and gave it to Hagar, putting it on her shoulder along with the child. And do not think about this as being a tiny little kid. He is a mid-teenager. He was 13 when he was circumcised, and it was within a year or so of that Yitzhak is conceived, and then we're only guessing about 3 years after that that everything blew up. So we're talking about him being somewhere around 15, 16 years of age. So he is practically an adult at this point. And so he is sent away with her, and she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. Now, Abraham gives her all the supplies she needs in order to make her way to wherever it is she's going to go. And there's nothing in the text to say specifically where she was on her way to. I have some suspicions, though. You remember that when she was pregnant with Ishmael, which would be about 16, 17 years ago now, she is by a well and cries out and asks God to help her out, and God sees her, and you remember all of that story. That's how Ishmael gets his name, because the God who sees me. And that's how the well gets its name, the God who sees me. I think she may have planned to go back to that exact same site and appeal to God. I think that site may have had a special meaning to her. But as sometimes happens when you're traveling, you can get turned around and get lost. And so she ends up wandering around in the wilderness south of Beersheba. Now, Beersheba does not exist just yet in this story, but you can find the region. So if she's south of there, she's down in the start of the very serious Sinai Desert. Well, verse 15, next bad thing can happen is when the water in the skin was gone. Because if you're on a certain path and you know exactly where all the watering stops are, that's fine. You can travel through a wilderness without a very big deal because you know where all of the water things are. But if you get off that track and then don't have a realization of where the next place is, once you're out of supplies, you're in deep trouble. Because you know, of course, just in normal life, you can't make it more than 3 days without water. If you are in a very hot, arid place, That shortens the time that you have to live without water. So they're in a mess. So she put the child under one of the bushes. Now, why is he in such a worse shape than her? Take a guess, people. He's a teenage boy with his mom going through a wilderness and only so much water to go around when they get lost. Guess who probably insisted mom get the water? Yeah. Ishmael is probably very dehydrated because he made mom do the drinking. And so he is pretty much passed out in the shade of one of these plants that do exist out there in the wilderness. Verse 16, then she went and she sat down opposite him a good way off, about the distance of a bow shot. For she said, let me not look on the death of the child. So she sat opposite him. She lifted up her voice and wept. So he's passed out. And she comes to the conclusion, I'm going to die too. I do not want to see him die. So she goes off a little farther on her own. And so she just starts crying, calling out to God. And you can almost imagine what she would have said. Where are you? The God who sees me, where are you? You promised me things. Well, that would be true. Verse 17, God heard the voice of the boy. Aha! So he's not totally passed out either. Maybe he's having these lapses in and out of consciousness because of his own dehydration. And so he's calling out for God's assistance too. And the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, what troubles you, Hagar? Fear not, for God has heard the voice of the boy where he is. Up, lift up the boy, hold him fast with your hand, for I will make him into a great nation. So God dispatches one of his angels. We don't know which one. Perhaps a guardian that's assigned to this particular branch of the Abrahamic family. And this angel has a reminder message. God said he was going to make of Ishmael a great nation, and God doesn't go back on his promises. And so God then opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. And she went and filled the skin with water and gave the boy a drink. So suddenly there's water in the wilderness. And God was with the boy, and he grew up, and he lived in the wilderness and became an expert with the bow. And he lived in the wilderness of Paran. Now, Paran, that wilderness, is south of the southern end of the Dead Sea. And it's right around in the region of Kadesh and south of Beersheba. And so we're right in that same region where she was located when she found the water, when God showed her the water. And possibly not too terribly far from where she first heard from God when she was pregnant with Ishmael. And so now we are told that that's where they end up living. He's very successful, and his mother took a wife for him from the land of Egypt. Now, she knows Egypt. It's apparently her country. So once they get established, once they know that their household is safe and secure there in the wilderness of Paran, she makes arrangements for a woman to come over and get married to him. And this is where the Ishmaelites get their start. Now, I hope I'm right in that the first few generations of Ishmaelites were devoted to the one and true living God. But we do know that later Ishmaelites became a problem because they did not follow the faith of Abraham, the father of Ishmael. And we'll talk more about this family later. So just kind of keep them on the back burner until we get to that passage. Now, we're almost out of time for the day, but we're going to shift our attention back to Abraham in the next verse, where he is approached by Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of Abimelech's army. You remember them? The last time we saw Abimelech was a little bit upset with Abraham and was sending him to go live elsewhere, somewhere in the territory of Gerar. Well, now he's got a much better opinion of Abraham. And in fact, he wants to make a special covenant with Abraham because he sees that Abraham is very blessed by God.